Testing 1, 2, 3. The sun is coming up. It looks like another beautiful day. And good morning, beautiful people. This is the Vagrant Optimist, and you are listening to the Get Real, Stay Real podcast. Well, it's 7 a.m. I've been up since 4:45, finished teaching some English. I've had 2 cups of coffee, and I am feeling all right. I hope everybody out there is doing the same. Well, I just finished another book. This one is called Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. I'm sure you're familiar with Tim Ferriss. 4-Hour Workweek was his first book. He is a very interesting character. And he has a extremely popular podcast called The Tim Ferriss Show. Before you go over there, listen to this one first. So this book, Tools of Titans, which is a monster, it's extremely big, but don't let that scare you. It is basically a collection of the best guests that he's had on his podcast over the number of years that he's been broadcasting, or podcasting, I should say. And so it's sort of like a highlight of all of his best guests. And he divides it into 3 categories, healthy, wealthy, and wise. Or in other words, your body, your wallet, and your brain. So why you would want to read this book is basically just to get a lot of really interesting knowledge from some of the most interesting and successful people in the world today. But for me, it took me back to before I started college. I had gotten out of high school, I had gone traveling, and it had really opened my brain up to the world. And I felt obligated to get into college, but I really had no idea what the hell I wanted to do, what I wanted to study. And so I went and I talked to a guidance counselor, and she suggested that I take general arts and science, which was basically I could pick all these different electives. It wasn't one thing to major in, and I had these choices of all these different electives. And she said, you know, choose anything that you might be interested in, and then after that first year, then you can sort of narrow it down and focus on what you really want to do. And I feel like that is what this book is really, is for somebody like me or you, for example, you know, in their late 20s, 30s, or even beyond, and you've reached a point in your life where you're looking for something new, something to reinvigorate your mind and your body, and just something to get into again, something to churn up some passion for, or you know, just something necessary to get healthier, wealthier, or wiser. And so this book is great for that, because Tim even says at the beginning of the book, like, I don't expect you to read every single page of this, you know, flip through it and find somebody or something, a topic that interests you, and that will lead you down a rabbit hole into you know, something that you might want to undertake yourself. And that's exactly what has gone on in this. I posted a while ago on Instagram a photo of the book, and it's just like I got it from the library, and it's just covered with so many post-it notes, sticky notes, because I can't highlight it and mark it up like I do most of my books. So I have saved, well, I used an entire thing of sticky notes, which is, I think there's like over 100 in a thing of sticky notes. And so now I'm just going through it all again and finding things that I want to pursue more and learn more about and perhaps engage in. So this book's got a little bit of everything. I don't even know where to begin. But The one thing that I wanted to read from this book is a passage. It's actually a bit of a manifesto, and it really, really caught me the other day as I was going through it, because I think it's something that's going to speak to a lot of you. It's about being busy and what is this bullshit busyness that we're all subjugating ourselves to. So, without further ado, I'm not going to talk much on the book itself. I definitely recommend it, but I'm going to read a bunch of passages from this manifesto, which was written by a guy named Tim Kreder, who was one of Tim's guests. And Tim's an essayist and a cartoonist, and but yeah, he wrote a very interesting piece specifically for this book, I believe. And I want to share it with you because it's very enlightening. And like it did for me, it's going to call you out on your shit. And if you haven't been called out on your shit in a while, then please stick around and listen to this because you need this. So here we go. It's called Lazy, a Manifesto. If you live in America in the 21st century, you've probably had to listen to a lot of people tell you how busy they are. It's become the default response when you ask anyone how they're doing. Busy, so busy, crazy busy. It is pretty obviously a boast disguised as a complaint. And the stock response is kind of a congratulation. That's a good problem to have, or better than the opposite. This frantic, self-congratulatory busyness is a distinctly upscale affliction. Notice it isn't generally people pulling back-to-back shifts in the ICU, taking care of their senescent parents, or holding down three minimum wage jobs they have to commute to by bus who need to tell you how busy they are. What those people are is not busy, but tired, exhausted, dead on their feet. It's most often said by people whose lamented busyness is purely self-imposed. Work and obligations they've taken on voluntarily, classes and activities they've encouraged their kids to participate in. They're busy because of their own ambition or drive or anxiety, because they are addicted to busyness and dread what they might have to face in its absence. Almost everyone I know is busy. They feel anxious and guilty when they aren't working or doing something to promote their work. They schedule in time with their friends the way a 4.0 GPA students make sure to sign up for some extracurricular activities because they look good on college applications. I recently wrote a friend asking if he wanted to do something this week, and he answered that he didn't have a lot of time, but if something was going on, to let him know, and maybe he could ditch work for a few hours. My question had not a preliminary heads up to some future invitation. This was the invitation. I was hereby asking him to do something with me, but his busyness was like some vast churning noise through which he was shouting at me, and I gave up trying to shout back over it. I recently also learned I can't say this word, neologism. So, just as an aside here, a neologism is something like a phrase like political correctness, man cave, content provider. Okay. I recently learned a neologism that I instantly recognized as heralding an ugly new turn in the culture: plan shopping. That is, deferring committing to any one plan for an evening until you know what all your options are, and then picking the one that's most likely to be fun or advance your career or have the most girls at. In other words, treating people like menu options or products in a catalog. This busyness is not a necessary or inevitable condition of life. It's something we've chosen, if only by our acquiescence to it. I recently Skyped with a friend who had been driven out of New York City by the rent and now has an artist residency in a small town in the south of France. She described herself as happy and relaxed for the first time in years. She still gets her work done, but it doesn't consume her entire day and brain. She says it feels like college. She has a circle of friends there who all go out to the cafe or watch TV together every night. She has a boyfriend again. She once ruefully summarized dating in New York: everyone is too busy and everyone thinks they can do better. What she had mistakenly assumed was her personality, driven, cranky, anxious, and sad. It turned out to be a deformative effect of her environment, of the crushing atmospheric pressure of ambition and competitiveness. It's not as if any of us wants to live like this, any more than any one person wants to be part of a traffic jam or stadium trampling or the hierarchy of cruelty in high school. It's something we collectively force one another to do. Based on the volume of my email correspondence and the amount of internet ephemera I am forwarded on a daily basis, I suspect that most people with office jobs are doing as little as I am. More and more people in this country no longer make or do anything tangible. If your job wasn't performed by a cat or a boa constrictor or a worm in a Tyrolean hat in a Richard Scarry book, I'm not convinced it's necessary. Yes, I know we're all very busy, but what exactly is getting done? Are all those people running late for meetings and yelling on their cell phones stopping the spread of malaria or developing feasible alternatives to fossil fuels or making anything beautiful? This busyness serves as a kind of existential reassurance, a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, your life cannot possibly be silly or trivial or meaningless if you are so busy, completely booked, in demand every hour of the day. All this noise and rush and stress seem contrived to drown out or cover up some fear at the center of our lives. I know that after I've spent a whole day working or running errands or answering emails or watching movies, keeping my brain busy and distracted, as soon as I lie down to sleep, all the nagging Cotian worries and big picture questions I've successfully kept at bay come crowding into my brain like monsters swarming out of the closet the instant you turn off the nightlight. When you try to meditate, your brain suddenly comes up with a list of 1,000 urgent items you should be obsessing about rather than simply sit still. One of my correspondents suggests that what we're also afraid of is being left alone with ourselves. I'll say it, I am not busy. I am the laziest, ambitious person I know. Like most writers, I feel like a reprobate, never heard that word before, reprobate, who does not deserve to live on any day that I do not write. But I also feel like 4 or 5 hours is enough to earn my stay on the planet for one more day. On the best ordinary days of my life, I write in the morning, go for a long bike ride, and run errands in the afternoon, and see friends, read, or watch a movie in the evening. The very best days of my life are given over to uninterrupted debauchery, but these are, alas, undependable and increasingly difficult to arrange. But just recently, I insidiously started, because of professional obligations, to become busy. For the first time in my life, I was able to tell people with a straight face that I was too busy to do this or that thing that they wanted me to do. I could see why people enjoy this complaint. It makes you feel important, sought after, and put upon. It's also an unassailable excuse for declining boring invitations, shirking unwelcome projects, and avoiding human interaction. Except that I hated actually being busy. Every morning in my inbox, it was full of emails asking me to do things I did not want to do, or presenting me with problems that I had to solve. It got more and more intolerable until finally I fled to the undisclosed location from which I am writing this. Here I am, largely unmolested by obligations. There is no TV. To check email, I have to drive to the library. I go a week at a time without seeing anyone I know. I've remembered about buttercups, stink bugs, and the stars. I read a lot. And I'm finally getting some real writing done for the first time in months. It's hard to find anything to say about life without immersing yourself in the world. But it's also just about impossible to figure out what that might be or how best to say it without getting the hell out of it again. I know not everyone has an isolated cabin to flee to, but not having cable or the internet turns out to be cheaper than having them. And nature is still technically free, even if human beings have tried to make access to it expensive. Time and quiet should not be luxury items. Idleness is not just a vacation, an indulgence, or a vice. It is as indispensable to the brain as vitamin D is to the body. And deprived of it, we suffer a mental affliction as disfiguring as rickets. The space and quiet that idleness provides is as necessary a condition for standing back from life and seeing it whole, for making unexpected connections and waiting for the wild summer lightning strikes of inspiration. It is, paradoxically, necessary to getting any work done. Idle dreaming is often the essence of what we do, writes Thomas Pynchon in his essay on sloth. Archimedes' Eureka in the bath, Newton's apple, Jekyll and Hyde, the benzene ring. History is full of stories of inspirations that came in idle moments and dreams. It almost makes you wonder whether loafers, gold brickers, and no accounts aren't responsible for more of the world's great ideas, inventions, and masterpieces than the hardworking. I suppose the world would soon slide to ruin if everyone behaved like me. But I would suggest that an ideal human life lies somewhere between my own defiant indolence and the rest of the world's endless frenetic hustle. My own life has admittedly been absurdly cushy, but my privileged position outside the hive may have given me a unique perspective on it. It's like being the designated driver at a bar. When you're not drinking, you can see drunkenness more clearly than those actually experiencing it. Unfortunately, the only advice I have to offer the busy is as unwelcome as the advice you'd give the drunk. I'm not suggesting everyone quit their jobs. Just maybe take the rest of the day off. Go play some skee ball. Fuck in the middle of the afternoon. Take your daughter to a matinee. My role in life is to be a bad influence. The kid standing outside the classroom window, making faces at you at your desk, urging you to just this once, make some excuse and get out of there. Come outside and play. Even though my own resolute idleness has mostly been a luxury rather than a virtue, I did make a conscious decision a long time ago to choose time over money, since you can always make more money. And I've always understood that the best investment of my limited time on earth is to spend it with the people I love. I suppose it's possible I'll lie on my deathbed regretting that I didn't work harder, write more, and say everything I had to say. But I think what I really wish is that I could have one more round of Delancey's with Nick. Another long late-night talk with Lauren. One last good hard laugh with Harold. Life is too short to be busy. All right. So that was the essay, basically, the manifesto from Tim Kreider. And yeah, that really struck me, especially because I was reading it while I overheard my wife listening to a podcast with Penny Lane Shen talking about, you know, how people are busy to the most bullshit extremes. Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. The book is Tools of Titans by Tim Ferriss. That was a manifesto by Tim Kreider. Hope I said his name right there. And that song, of course, at the beginning is sort of a classic now. That was The Shins, New Slang. And here it is again to take us out. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, have a beautiful day. And remember to check yourself on just how busy you really are. Okay, this has been The Vagrant Optimist. Thanks so much for listening. And come on back anytime to tune in to the podcast that encourages you to get real and stay real. See you next time.
It's right when you die. Oh, then